Welcome to Life Solved, the research podcast from the University of Portsmouth, where we tackle big questions about our world, from politics to technology, our bodies and environments. To do this, we're catching up with researchers who are challenging existing ideas and seeking new ways of solving some of the biggest challenges facing us today. I'm John Worsey, your host and a writer at the University of Portsmouth. Let's start with a question. How far would you go in the name of research?
They can be places of abuse. They can be absolute hellholes. So we owe it to ourselves to apply some scrutiny to what happens inside.
In today's episode, we peer inside places that most people want to be kept out of, but one University of Portsmouth researcher has worked hard to get into prisons. To punish or reform? The question that's plagued the judicial system for generations, with countries taking conflicting views on the purpose and function of prisons. A criminal's experience on one side of the planet can be worlds away from another. But which approach is most effective and, in want of a better word, just?
Prisons are closed worlds, which means that many people find it really difficult to understand what they're like, what goes on inside.
That's Francis Pakes, Professor of Criminology at the University of Portsmouth, who's studied prisons both in the UK and abroad. Like many of our academics here, Francis is passionate about his work, and he's willing to go above and beyond, and in his case, behind bars, in the name of research. Let's set the scene. It's an unusually chilly day for June in West Iceland. Summer 2018 has so far been the worst on record in the region. Despite the brisk wind, Francis takes a moment to admire the view of the lush green landscape against the ice-blue sky before turning his attention back to Kvíabryggja prison, where he'd spend the next week as a quasi-inmate.
The great thing about being there and immersing yourself is that you don't just have an interview and you stop the interview and that's it. You have many chats and bits in between. And they really offer some valuable lessons about who you're spending time with, which you don't get in the first instance. Over a bit of time, you do discover certain things.
I can think of a few other places I'd like to spend my holidays, but each to their own. Before we delve into Francis's time behind bars, let's start with the why. Francis has spent 25 years researching prisons as part of his role at the university. He explains why he's still fascinated by them.
Prisons are closed worlds, which means that many people find it really difficult to understand what they're like, what goes on inside. And it's important that when we have closed worlds in our societies, that we let the light in so that people have a sense of what is going on there. Is justice being done on our behalf? And our efforts being made to make sure that prisoners, when they come out, have a better chance of staying on straight and narrow than when they went in? As a university lecturer, I was really keen on being able to show my students what prisons are like, because it is so difficult to explain. So I've organized visits for students over the years because of exactly that, because I thought it was important that students who may end up working in the criminal justice system have a sense of the sounds, the smells, the atmosphere of prisons. It's really difficult to come to an understanding of what these prisons are like if you don't have that experience.
Francis gave my colleague Robin Montague a quick history lesson on the judicial system. This is handy for those of us who haven't spent time behind bars.
Prisons became a thing, a main form of punishment, in the 18th century. Before that, there were prisons, but they were more holding cells, because physical punishment and banishment were the more common punishments, including the death penalty, of course. Only in the 18th century became a spell of imprisonment a main sentence, and that's when we saw the proliferation of prisons as we recognize them today. And in Victorian England, in the 19th century, this phenomenon really took off, and we still today have many Victorian prisons built in the 1850s or thereabout that still function today. But the idea of solitary confinement, being put in a cell, where historically when this came in as a fashion, you could say, is that solitary confinement would be good because then you're left alone to think about what you've done. that reflection, that would be the start of rehabilitation. What we know today is that it doesn't really work. It's very bad for most people's mental health to be isolated for so long. So that actually community, positive work is far better for people in terms of rehabilitation. But that's how it started. So the idea that you were left to yourself on your own devices, think about what you've did, and maybe you would find God, that would be the way towards both salvation and rehabilitation.
And do most countries or most judicial systems still use the solitary confinement approach to prisons, or is it changing?
There is still a lot of solitary confinement. We now know about the damaging effect of being isolated for so long. We know about sensory deprivation, about social deprivation. So many prisons don't operate quite in that way anymore. But many prisons, and certainly every prison system, still has solitary confinement as a way of punishing prisoners or as a way of separating out troublesome prisoners from the rest. So it still exists, but we no longer believe in its beneficial properties.
And what about the fundamental purpose of prisons? Should it be to punish an individual for their crime or rehabilitate them to prevent further crimes being committed when they're released?
In a way, you could say prisons are in a split, because there are two promises a prison needs to keep. One is that it serves as the place for punishment. And let's not forget, many people in prison have caused tremendous harm. And it's important that we acknowledge that. It's important that justice is done on behalf of victims and on behalf of society as a whole. So there is a place for the objective of punishment. And with punishment, it's congruent that we have austere facilities. So the idea of prison as punishment is isolation and deprivation. You're not where you want to be, and you don't have the stuff you normally have. So that's one side of the prison objective. But the other is rehabilitation. And certainly, since World War II, or maybe since the 1960s, we have become really enthusiastic about the possibility that positive things can happen in prison. So the idea is that if we educate prisoners, if we look after their health and well-being, if we give them chances to learn a trade, they may come out better equipped to be successful in the world. And if they are, it's good for everyone because they contribute to society and they won't reoffend. So prison embodies two quite contradictory goals. And that's a tremendous challenge to find a balance between the two.
Well, in the UK, just recently, they started saying about using prisoners as an opportunity to teach them textile trade because there's a gap in the industry in the UK.
Well, yeah, there has been, probably globally, certainly in America as well, there is a certain link between prison as punishment and prison as a provision of cheap or free labour. And that means that prisons have always been involved. In wartime, prisoners dig trenches. In peacetime, they undertake tasks that others don't really want to undertake. So that's certainly part of the more hidden agenda of the prison system, is that there are people that you can have do dirty work.
But as I said in the introduction, not all prison experiences are the same. There are several factors which contribute to this. The facilities, the types of criminals incarcerated, the quality of living, like food and your day-to-day routines, and, of course, money.
We are very much erring on the side of austerity, and increasingly so since about 2010, when there's been savage cuts to the prison system. So staffing levels have dropped and levels of violence have increased steadily. Levels of violence between prisoners, but also levels of violence from prisoners to staff, which I think is a tremendously serious issue. It's a workplace. We need people to want to work in the prison system and make it better. And who wants to work in a setting where physical violence is as common as it is? So prisons are too violent, which is bad, of course, for those who work there, but it's also bad for those who reside there. It leaves you in a situation where only the most motivated, only the most driven, only the most able prisoners are really able to reinvent themselves and come out substantially better than they went in. For many prisoners, it's a matter of survival, and they simply won't have the ability to continue to better themselves in such a straining, stressful, scary environment. We have aging prisons, but when you look across the board of the public service, schools are in dire need of money, hospitals. So our infrastructure in terms of buildings, there is strain everywhere. And the case to say, do you know what, let's not build a new school, but let's build a new prison instead, is politically very unattractive. We also deal with with a public mood that tends to vilify criminals, and in some cases entirely justified. But then again, if you look at your run-of-the-mill prisoner who might be in their 20s, in their 30s, typically has issues with education, issues with finance, issues with relationships. They may have done something bad, something stupid, but then find that whatever avenue there was in life, it is pretty much closed off from them. And that can lead to a notion of hopelessness, that basically whatever you do, life is never going to be kind to you and you will never be successful. And that sense of hopelessness, that's something we should really try and turn around. A life without hope creates violence, creates desperation, people with nothing to live for. Too many people in prison service feel like that. And it is really worth an investment to reduce the number of people who are in that position.
While the financial costs of prisons are significant,
the standard answer is always that a night in a prison costs as much as a night in a nice hotel.
Francis says the personal cost to inmates is also something to consider when looking at ways to improve the system.
It's really hard because it's obvious what you lose when you go to prison. Even if you have a short prison sentence and you're in there for maybe a few months, many prisoners lose their home. Many prisoners lose friendships, relationships. Family ties are usually strained. Financial strain is very common. So the cost of imprisonment in terms of your place in society when you come out is obvious and it's really severe. Add to that a prison experience where quite possibly there's trauma and quite possibly people go into some kind of a survival mode that has nothing to do with finding ways to reinvent themselves or learning new skills. Some do, many don't. So on the whole, the system is simply not geared up to rehabilitation. It is too stressful and too scary to be there. We know that those on the underside of society are more likely to be imprisoned. So people that commit theft, that commit burglary, it is also the people who have no other means. So it is often that kind of acquisitive crime that lends you in trouble with the law in a criminal justice sense, much more than, say, fraud. So it is people with little social capital on the underside of society that are most likely to find themselves between bars. You must say, and it's important that we say that, prison populations are a weird and wonderful world. So it is also true that you find all sorts of people in there, but predominantly it is the people with those characteristics.
Hello, I'm Professor Peter Lee from the University of Portsmouth's Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences. This episode of Life Solved illuminates some of our research, which is all driven by vital questions about how people should live. Our researchers investigate everything from culture and community to crime and international relations. We also explore the power dynamics of factors like language, race, and gender. So if this podcast has you feeling inspired, you can find out how to support our research, collaborate, or study with us at port.ac.uk/lifesolved.
To help get Francis into the right frame of mind for this episode, we decided to record in an ex-Victorian prison in Portsmouth's historic dockyard. From 1892, it was used to incarcerate people in the Navy, usually people who'd had one too many rums, but after 30 years, it was abandoned. It's now been repurposed as an innovative space for university staff, students, and local businesses to use. If this sounds like a bit of you, find out more in the description to this episode. The reason why Francis felt strangely at ease was because this wasn't the first time he'd spent time in a cell.
Given the frustrations that I and many criminologists feel about punishment in this country, many of us have travelled north to the Nordic countries, and that often involves Sweden or Finland or Norway, where the prisons are smaller, they're better equipped, there is better staff, there are more options for rehabilitation, and they don't seem to be as violent, as disruptive as prisons here. They seem to be calmer, quieter, more respectful places. So I discovered that many of my colleagues across the world have been to Norway and other countries, and so have I, and it was an absolute eye-opener. It was then suggested to me that there is Iceland, a really small country, where the prisons are even smaller, and where, it was explained to me, the regimes are even looser. So I got really curious about prisons that are still, in a way, different. I made friends with a psychiatrist who works in the prison system, but also a professor of criminology at the university there, the University of Iceland.
For anyone who isn't the biggest fan of geography, Iceland is a small country tucked away on the edge of Europe. It has a population of only about 340,000 people. Iceland's prisons are small too. There are only 5, altogether housing fewer than 200 prisoners. Of these 5, two are open prisons.
And Iceland is a small world. It's a country the size of a city in terms of population. Portsmouth has the same population as Iceland as a whole. And that turned out to be a real advantage. So, strangely, and by happy coincidence, the head of the prison service, a person called Paul Winkle, was a former student of the professor I met. And because of that, it was relatively easy for him to introduce me and get permission to visit all the prisons. So, initially, the access to basically spend a day or half a day was very easily granted through that route. Now, I remember going to an open prison, and it's a really small place with about 20 prisoners. It's tiny. It's basically a farm. There are sheep on the land that are being tended by prisoners. And I visited this place with my colleague from the university. We get lunch. We had a really good meal where prisoners and staff eat hot food together. We get talking, and I was struck by the, in a way, the friendly atmosphere. People refer to each other by first name, which doesn't happen in the UK. People mingle so that there are lots of informal bits of interaction between the officers and prisoners. And my overriding impression that I was left with afterwards is this as good as it seems? Do you have prisoners where they have managed to somehow take the trauma out of the experience? Is that actually true? And one thing you learn in criminology and criminal justice is don't always trust your first impressions. Sometimes there's more going on below the surface. So that's when I asked, can I actually stay here? Can I experience this place from the inside? Could I be a prisoner? Could you give me a room or a cell? Could I do what prisoners do? And then in the process, basically talk to everyone about what it's like. And they quite readily said yes to that idea.
If you don't ask, you don't get. Francis was given a unique opportunity to stay in two open prisons for a week at a time. Just like in the UK and most places around the world, an open prison in Iceland is one with less security and supervision than a closed prison. Essentially, there are fewer restrictions.
Such prisons are the final destination in a prison journey. So you're starting closed conditions. And people I spoke with, the prisoners I spoke with, were very clear to me that there's a night and day difference between being in a closed prison in Iceland and an open prison. The closed prisons are not particularly nice. They are tidy, they're humane, but much more prison-y in the way that people imagine. So there is a real will within the prison population to get out of those closed prisons and into an open prison when you can. That gives you an incentive to behave and to make the case that you as a prisoner are ready for open conditions, that you don't need the closed conditions, that you won't abscond and that you'll contribute to the running of the place. So there is a built-in incentive in the closed prisons to behave so that you have a shout at having a better life in the latter part of your sentence. So not every prisoner can be like that, absolutely not. And it's not suited for every prisoner either. But it is attractive to have prison systems altogether, but at the very final end, there are prisons that make the transition from prison to normal life less stark, less daunting. So open prisons can serve a really important function there. So I don't want to overstate the extent of that immersive experience. But at the same time, if you have a handful of staff and about 20 prisoners there, you can get to know that place quite well, how it works, the daily rhythms. I set out to basically try to talk to anyone who was happy to talk to me, and the vast majority of people did. And it was enough to also look below the surface, because initially almost every person said to me, of course, this is nice. I mean, food's nice, the view's nice, you can go outside. It's so much better here than to be in a closed prison. It's all lovely. So your first answer was always like this. The worries and the hesitations and the pains, so to say, only surfaced later, when I really learned that it's still an imprisoning experience for most prisoners. They're still away from where they want to be. They spend time with other prisoners, which for some was not an issue, but for some really was. They still had worries about what life would be like when they came out. But at the same time, they were not scared of being assaulted, either by the staff or by prisoners, which happens in many countries in the world. Most had a good night's sleep. Most had a decent meal. I know that you can't ever speak of a drugs-free prison, but I reckon that it was pretty low on drugs. So it was more of a healthy environment than most prisons are, which is not to say that they weren't prisons or that it was too much like a holiday camp. They were still experienced as prisons. And one of the intriguing things was the mixture of people there. There were sex offenders there, violent offenders and drugs offenders, roughly as three groups, who at first sight get on okay. But in the second sort of instance, when you look a bit more closely, you realize that there are divisions and that people don't get on as well as you think initially. It was also clear to me that there were one or two violent offenders who live in a different universum from mine. And it's not like they were violent, but they did talk about violence more, and violence had a different place in their mental life than to mine. You learn things, but only in the second instance. I was never scared. I was never really insecure. You have to remember, I'm just this guy from England who wants to know how these places work. And because prisons can be boring if you're there day in, day out. To have someone new to talk to is actually quite nice. Because I knew about prisons in the UK and other countries, and I also had been in all the prisons in Iceland, I could easily strike up a conversation with them. They realized that I did know my stuff at one level, so they could take me seriously. But at the same time, I'm an outsider, so they could just confide in me sometimes. So often those conversations were really frank and terribly interesting.
As far as rehabilitation goes, Iceland does sound like the ideal place to turn over a new leaf. But the reality of implementing a similar system elsewhere is a lot more complicated.
Well, in this country, we now have many prisons that are 1,000-plus people. And if you had aerial shots of some of the newest prisons like Oakwood or Berwyn, they look like three or four prisons on one site. We are still, in a way, scaling up our prisons over time. In the Nordic countries, a prison with 100 people is considered relatively large. And in Iceland, they're still much smaller. And that has many advantages. Everybody knows everyone. Officers know a lot about the prisoners simply through informal interaction, and that allows them to rely on relational security. They are in a much better position to understand what's going on than if you are in a massive prison with lots of turnover and you have a wing full of unruly people, when it's tempting, if you're an officer, to in a way keep yourself away. A prison, by its design and by its culture, can encourage or discourage such informal interactions, but they can be vital to the running of the place, to detecting security threats, but also for prisoners to feel heard, to feel humane, and to get the feeling that actually somehow the system still cares. It's not all beautiful, it's not all rosy. One of the closed prisons is actually quite tatty and run down. The other is, once you get over this, yes, the food's nice, etc., once you get over those initial conversations, you get a sense of the frustrations that exist, and they exist within staff and amongst the prisoner population, that actually, while they offer a safe environment, many prisoners wish there was more to do. They wish there was more for them to actually further themselves. You know, accredited courses, for instance. They wish there was more work outside. So there is also, in a way, a certain lack of ambition within the system to take rehabilitation to the next level.
So, in an ideal world, what would the best version of a prison system look like?
Probably most important is order. A prison needs to be run well, like a school, like a hospital, like a military establishment. It needs to be run well. That means that order is most important. Order brings predictability. Order brings calmness. Contrary to what people sometimes think, most prisoners want order too. Chaos in the wing is scary for most, because that would bring, in a way, power to the ones you least want to have power among a group of criminals. So order is important, which means that you need prison officers who know what they're doing, who are paid well, who are trained well, and who can actually exercise that authority on the wing. That's very important. Also very important is a sense of hope. Most prisoners, when you go in the first time, no matter what your background is, no matter what you've done, you will feel your life's over. It's all messed up and there's nowhere to go. Which is why first night is an enormous risk when it comes to self-harm and suicide. So hopelessness is common in prisons. So we need to find ways of structurally injecting a sense of progression, a sense of hope into the prison system.
As we've heard, Iceland's open prisons are, to a degree, unique. Perhaps it's their size, their population, or their relaxed nature that puts them ahead of the rest. What's clear is there are lessons to be learned from our Nordic neighbours. Thanks for listening to this episode of Life Solved. You're very welcome to be part of the discussion. Email us at lifesolved@port.ac.uk. That's lifesolved, one word, at port.ac.uk. Tell us what you think and make suggestions for future episodes of Life Solved. And we'd love it if you click follow on your podcast app so you never miss an edition. We'd really appreciate it if you left a rating or review as well. That helps us get these conversations into more ears around the globe. If you've been inspired by this episode and want to support our work, then head to port.ac.uk/lifesolved to find out how. You can also find out how to work or study with us. Bye for now.